Welcome into a new episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with Jason Williams. And because we already did our one podcast this week, breaking down the Dallas game, now we've turned our attention to the Jets game, where the Bengals are headed to New Jersey on Saturday to a place that they have not really played all that well at in MetLife Stadium. But Jason and I were both at Joe Burrow's press conference, Zach Taylor's press conference yesterday. So we're going to break it all down, talk about what everyone is saying, what's the temperature of the locker room, things that we found interesting. So I guess I'll just start it off with Burrow's press conference. Of all of the headlines that he had yesterday, what did you find was the most interesting thing Joe Burrow said yesterday?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Like, he was just his calm, cool, collected self. And, you know, nobody's panicking, but there is a sense of urgency. And, you know, I think he made it pretty clear that they were addressing – you could just feel – you could just – I don't know, feel, it's not the right word. Mm-hmm. But you could just really sense that even though Joe's like a cool character, that underneath all that, there's like a real burning sense of urgency.
And he hates to lose.
They know what's on the line here. And, you know, he basically said – when he said, like, we can't go down to 0-3, mm-hmm. he's basically saying this is a must win.
And I bet you never thought – when you and I were making our predictions for the schedule, a week three game in a 17-game season would be a must win. But I agree with you completely. That comment about not going to down to 0-3 really stood out to me. I thought, and it was my question that revoked the answer from him. And sometimes he's just got like such a serious face that I'm like, is he shooting like darts into my eyes? Like, because I asked him if he was frustrated with — it's one thing when you're playing with, let's say, four out of five players on your offensive line and two wide receivers for like rookies or first or second year players. So where I was getting at with my question was, I was saying, does it make you even more frustrated that the errors that are happening, particularly on the offensive line, like the communication not happening so that Micah Parsons is a free runner and blows right by LC, you know, are those types of things, is it more frustrating for you because those things shouldn't be happening to a group that Ted Karras played in the league a long time, Alex Kappa a long time, LC a long time. The only new one is Cordell Volson, and he's done, you can arguably say, as good as the best one has. You haven't heard him that often. And
honestly, there wasn't much expectations of him. He wasn't even supposed to be the starter. So
when I was asking that, that's kind of where I was thinking behind it. And he said, yes, like, we're all frustrated. But then he then kind of like walked it back and said, but let's all just take a deep breath and relax. Like, he pulled like the Aaron Rodgers thing. When you do that, when you say publicly, because that was the headlines for my story, every local media story around Cincinnati, they even had a clip of it on SportsCenter. When you do that, you better back it up, because people will not relax if they lose to the Jets. And I was asked on an interview yesterday, is it time to panic? And I said, the Bengals are at a yellow light right now. They're 0-2. They still have a lot of time to get themselves together. Lots of teams go on two-game losing streaks. But if they lose to the Jets, the percentages of them making the playoffs is very, very slim. And
only six teams have ever done it.
When you lose to the Jets, the Joe Flacco Jets, you could argue, do you even deserve to be in the playoffs?
Only six teams have ever gone 0-3 and made the playoffs in the history of the NFL. The last team to do it was the Houston Texans in 2018, and before that, it was 98. So that tells you how hard it is. So basically, Kelsey, what you're saying is, well, no, you're not. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I think I'm listening to what you're saying, being down there, watching this unfold. This, you can pretty much write this season off if they lose Sunday. This thing is over I should couch that slightly, is pretty much over. Yeah.
And Jason and I, we're not trying to be like Mr. and Mrs. Negative. We're just trying to be objective here. And this is my last point on the Jets game. It is the head coach's job to get this team ready to play. Once it starts on Sunday, it's his job to manage the game, which there's been some issues this year.
Certainly.
But if you can't have a team that's loaded with Joe Mixon, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, Logan Wilson, Trey Hendrickson, and Sam Hubbard.
And supposedly an upgraded offensive line.
And not beat the New York Jets, who have been one of the worst teams. And I'm not trying to kill the Jets, but it is what it is. They've been one of the worst teams in the NFL for the last decade. And they're without their starting quarterback. If you can't 2 years in a row get your team ready to go on the road and do your job and like a business trip, you have issues. And that's why I think when you say like this, you can write the season off, that's when I would wonder if that locker room stays how it is, because they know what's riding on this game. And you have to wonder if they start questioning, what are we doing during the week that's not getting us ready to go? So that's kind of where I'm at in terms of, I find this one of the most fascinating games, not because it's going to be like, oh, I think the Jets are going to, you know, be able to go toe-to-toe with Burrow, but I just, because there's so much riding on it in week three, which I think is interesting. But the other key component of this that I want to talk to you about, because we've talked a lot about on this podcast, is yesterday I go out to practice, and I was one of the first reporters out at practice, and I'm looking around, and usually one of the first things we do at practice is roll call. Mm-hmm. So just make sure like there's no unaccounted for starters missing, because the injury report in the NFL isn't released until 4:00.
Yeah.
So I'm looking around, there's three fields. So sometimes it takes me a while, because I also don't ever want to put out misinformation and tweet like, oh, so-and-so's not here, but he's on the rehab field.
Sure.
But number 71, Lael Collins, is big, like kind of hard to not notice if he's there or not. So I'm looking at the offensive line because they practice on the field closest to me. He's not there. I'm like, huh, interesting. Then I look on the middle field, not there. Then I look on the far field, not there. And then I even brought someone over with me, another reporter, to see if they could see the rehab field, just because I wanted to make for sure before I put out a tweet that he wasn't there. And I tweeted, Lael Collins is not at practice. Just putting it out there. I'm not saying that, because at that point,
he had no idea why.
Why, or if he was going to come out later, and I don't want the little Twitter trolls coming at me being like, why are you trying to make drama? So I put out this preface tweet that said, media is allowed to watch the first 30 minutes. I won't be able to tell you if he practiced at all until the injury report, but I'm just saying for the first 30 minutes, every starter, including Jermaine Pratt, who didn't practice, but he was on the rehab field, was accounted for, but LC. So then I get Frank Pollack post-game, post-practice, because I'm writing a story on the run game today and why the run game has been horrendous, which is another thing we can talk about. But I asked Frank Pollack, which it's kind of like protocol in the NFL for assistance. Any injury questions, their response is you'd have to ask the head coach about that. But we had already talked to Zach, and he didn't say anything. And we don't get to talk to him until Friday again. So I was like, okay. And then the injury report comes out. And it said, Lael Collins did not practice with a back injury. So here we go again. The back injury that kept him out. Nobody knows what happened, what type of back injury it was. It was, everything was like hush hush about it. And he missed almost all of training camp with this back injury, but we were told don't worry. He's a vet. It almost like he doesn't need practice. He's going to be fine. And then He's not there. And the reason, and I tweeted this, the reason it's significant that he wasn't even out there. Like, it's one thing if you mentally, like physically can't go, because the turnaround in the NFL is pretty short, like Sunday to Wednesday. That's why Wednesday is more of a mental day where they, that's the day they install the game plan. So that's why it's kind of a big deal that your starting right tackle wasn't even on the field when the team's installing the game plan. And oh, by the way, it's not like he had the greatest game of his life against the Cowboys. You could argue
he was terrible.
He was the worst offensive lineman. So this is the storyline that it could be an issue, be a big issue, because Isaiah Prince is on injured reserve. He's their number one backup swing tackle. So now we don't, and we won't know about LC's game status until Friday. And I have a feeling Zach will probably list him as questionable just because they don't want to tip their hat to the Jets. They want to make you have to prepare for whoever. But the backup to Isaiah Prince is Hakeem Adeniji. And for those who watched the Bengals last year, it was not great from him. So that's one to circle, because this just seems like it is going to be a problem. And he said when he first got to Cincinnati, my biggest goal is to be able to play a full season. Hasn't played a full NFL season since 2018. Thoughts?
Well, the thoughts are that this signing is well, so far the Bengals get an incomplete on it because we're only a couple games in, and but this thing is trending toward being a bust of a signing. It's trending that way. I want to be clear about that. It's not. I'm not saying it is a bust, or it being the signing, but it's trending that way. And all these are all little signs of that as well. And it's like, okay, what, you know, what's going on? Like, you go out and nothing was mentioned about it. And then it's like, oh, all of a sudden he's not there. And then you go back to how terrible he was in the Cowboys game. You go back to to training camp and he hardly got any work in training camp.
And he was
camp.
The one who started the fight.
There was that too. I think there were questions about, you know, was he in shape coming into camp as well? Those are all not good signs for this. And the Bengals are very good at handling distractions. They're very good at sort of the next man up and let's keep moving forward. I mean, unlike the culture of the old Bengals, this Bengals culture is very good at that. But, you know, we'll see, given now that they're 0-2, the line has been terrible, I mean, would you call Collins the top free agent signing on that line? I mean, there were three of them.
Alex Kappa.
Kappa was, okay.
Kappa was for sure.
But certainly, you know, he was one of the three, you know, big signings on the line.
But I will say, if you look at the contract details, the Bengals do a great job with this. Katie Blackburn, she does a great job managing the cap. His contract is structured in that, like, if he wants to get his money, he needs to play.
He needs to play.
So,
well, and that's good that they structured it that way,
but
because they knew he hadn't played a full season since 2018. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just wonder how long is this leash? Because you don't really have anything better, but he can't have another game like he did against the Dallas Cowboys.
I mean, what a mess it's been so far. You're thinking, oh, the one weakness on this football team after they win the AFC championship and darn near win the Super Bowl is the offensive line. They go out and they get three, you know, free agent signings, guys who are proven in the NFL. And then Collins doesn't play most of training camp. Okay. And then you get into the preseason and the guy they were relying on to be the left guard, Jackson Carman, is terrible. And so, okay, well, we got to plug a rookie in there in Volson. And, you know, they were looking for him to be sort of a project and that you develop him and that he becomes a serviceable backup, but never like a day one starter in his rookie season. Well, here we are with that. And now all the sacks, you know, they're trending toward 110 sacks for the regular season after giving up, what, 70 over the regular and postseason last year. And it's like, oh my gosh, what But let's go back to what we first talked about at the beginning. You talk about Joe Burrow and how good he is. And I think a lot of these things don't get exacerbated because of how he handles, how he's the face of the franchise.
Well, and how they've played horrendous the first 2 weeks, and he still got them in a chance to win every game, despite getting blown into the ground because, he's got no time. And, yes, there are some times he needs to get rid of the ball faster.
Yeah.
But
how he handles that on the field, but also how he handles questions from the media, how he doesn't throw anyone under the bus, how it's very much a we, and that's a leader. And I think there's not a lot of freaking out overall, generally. You know, certainly there's some fans that are, and, you know, I can't blame them. But I think a lot of this stuff gets sort of, I don't know if tamped down is the right phrase, because of how he handles it, because of how Zach handles it.
Yeah.
It is not, you know, this is such a difference from the old Bengals in this culture. Yeah. But we go back to Sunday, and it's time to prove it. And it's a must-win game. And I know football people get freaked out about talking about a must-win September. But Joe Burrow, in so many words, said it when he said, we can't go down 0-3. Exactly. He was saying this is a must-win.
Exactly.
And it is. All right, it's time for our X's and O's segment here on the BBP. We welcome in reporter Charlie Goldsmith. Charlie, how are you?
Doing well. How about you?
Good. X's and O's, you've watched the film on both the Jets and obviously on the Bengals. This has been the storyline so far this season. So far, offensive line against Bengals offensive line against the front of the other team, and let's stick with that. What are you seeing there from the Jets' defensive front?
I think you learned a lot with how the Cowboys defended the Bengals, specifically the way they used Micah Parsons more as an edge rusher than they had any other time in Micah Parsons' entire career. The Jets have Carl Lawson, who we know well as a former Bengal, and the Cowboys went out of their way to get Parsons one-on-one matchups with Lyle Collins. And I wonder if the biggest takeaway for this week for a guy like Lawson, and the biggest takeaway now consistently, is going to be teams trying to isolate their edge rushers against the Bengals tackles, try to keep Joe Burrow in the pocket. And I think the Bengals have to run the ball to stop teams from trying to beat them that way.
You talk about that. Now down a tight end, the Bengals, but the tight ends and Zach Taylor talked about, P. Ryan's blocking. Are those sort of those non-offensive linemen also going to come in and be key here to try to help get this thing, Joe Burrow protected?
There are certain situations where I think yes. Like, for example, when the Bengals play all out blitzing teams, like historically the Ravens have been, that's that kind of matchup where Sample and P. Ryan's and even Stanley Morgan's snap count have really gone through the roof. I don't see the Jets as much as that team. They're more of your, not traditional, kind of new age rush four and confuse you in the secondary style of defense. I really think they need to use more empty. I think they need to spread out the offense more. I think they need to have less going on in the backfield. Burrow's been great when he's been getting rid of the ball quickly. He's actually been incredible this season when he's been getting rid of the ball quickly. And I see that as more the solution than Burrow extending in the pocket with more guys helping him in protection around him.
This is of local interest here to, you know, local fans. Sauce Gardner, former Bearcats player, first-round pick, cornerback for the Jets. What are you seeing from him? How's he playing this year?
There have been some communications issues on the back line with the Jets. Like, they gave up a touchdown where Sauce was pointing to the safety. Someone was supposed to pick up the Browns receiver, and no one did. It's tough to know whose responsibility specifically that was. I think that's a sign of this being a Jets secondary that doesn't have a lot of experience together. But hey, Sauce is big. He's fast. He's physical. He's athletic. T. Higgins said this yesterday. He's one of the few corners in the league who's really tall enough to guard him. He's kind of that new wave guy to guard a new wave receiver. I'm a big fan of his game overall. But the Jets secondary hasn't really clicked so far through the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think everybody thought it'd be Sauce versus Ja'Marr Chase, but it sounds like we'll be seeing Sauce on T. Higgins. That's interesting.
Yeah. Charlie? Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Good to see you guys.
So before we, you know, kind of make our predictions of what we think happens, we should talk about, and Charlie kind of just broke down the X's and O's about the Jets, but they do have some good players. And you mentioned Sauce Gardner. They have a good wide receiver duo, one of the best young ones in the NFL. Obviously, Joe Flacco is in for Zach Wilson because he got injured during playing in a preseason game. So that stinks for the Jets. And they have a really good front with Quinnen Williams. He was really good. And they gave the Bengals fits. But the one thing I did want to mention on here, because it could become a story, and you weren't there for this, but I'm sure you saw the tweets, Dax Hill. Lou Anarumo spoke on the usage of Dax Hill because a ton of people have apparently asked, like, why the Bengals rookie first-round pick hasn't seen a lot of time.
He only played, what, two snaps last week?
Yeah. If you haven't had a chance I don't know where it would be posted. I retweeted it, but Lou's answer was spot on as to why you haven't seen Dax Hill on the field. And I'll read some of it, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. And he said it, like, adamantly. He said, that kid will get in when I feel it's the right time, in the right place, in the right role, in the right game. And that's how it's going to go. Those guys are the best guys, and you don't mess with the corners and DBs. He's referring to Cheeto, Eli, Vaughn, and Jesse. I don't want to get mad. This is my baby, the DBs, because Anarumo's been a DBs coach his whole life. I always say those are the shortstop, second baseman, if those guys just flip you the ball, because I know the guy is going to be there without even looking. That stuff takes time. The communication, high-level pass-offs during a play when these guys are communicating, these younger guys can have no idea what that's all about until they can slowly and surely get into it. He said, I had Xavien Howard as a rookie the first few games, not so good. It took him about until week 14 before he became Xavien Howard. I think he's one of, if not the best corners in the league. It takes time for those guys. The fact that Dax and Cam Taylor-Britt coming back off injury, the fact that they have time to not get beat in a game and lose some confidence, because as soon as you put those guys out there too fast and those guys get rattled, there's a problem. It's a problem. Nobody sees the three technique get out of his gap and give up a B-gap run. Nobody sees a linebacker shed a block the wrong way. Everybody in the stadium, 80,000 plus, 15 million, everyone thinks they know the corner gave up a play or a safety took the wrong angle when one of those players gives up a play. Confidence for those guys is huge. When you have a tight-knit group like we have there, it's absolutely no reason to screw up that chemistry. And I feel like that's like a mic drop. Like, what the Bengals have going on in the back end with the veterans that they have, there's no need to get Dax in for the sake of getting Dax in. And I have full confidence that once the Bengals start playing, like, I think against the Dolphins, you're going to see more Dax because of the weapons the Dolphins have, and Tua is going to throw the ball down the field. They haven't really played a quarterback that they've really had to respect his ability to throw the ball down the field. So I just wanted to bring that up with you because, you know, when – teams are losing, people start asking questions, and, you know, why not get Dax Hill in there? You know, maybe he could get more interceptions. There's your answer, and I think it's a really good one.
No, I think so too. And I honestly, like, I mean, there's not a lot to pick apart about the defense overall.
Right.
The defense has been fine. Let's from the 50,000 foot view, that's the least of the Bengals' problems. They've been solid. They've been playing. They've been playing like a playoff team, honestly.
The Bengals
so far.
Defense
I know
is good.
People are like, yeah, like I said that to someone. They're like, oh, well, they gave up that big long drive to start the Cowboys game, and
they're not going
to
be perfect.
They're not going to be right, and it's like,
but they've played well enough for this team to win two games and be 2-0.
Exactly.
So, and I think the biggest contrast between the Bengals defense and offense, and I'd be curious to see if you agree with this, is you know what you're going to get from the Bengals defense. You know that even if they give up a long touchdown, they're going to make the adjustments. Yep. And it's not, they're not going to get beat twice in the same way. And you have full confidence that they're going to go out and execute.
Yep.
You don't have that same type of confidence about the offense.
It's like two different teams when it comes to adjustments and, you know, in-game adjustments are so critical. And I think that I'm glad you brought that point up. Yeah, I watch a lot of college football, and you watch teams that are just flat out better than the other team, but their coaches don't make adjustments. And they end up losing, or they are in close games they shouldn't be in. Well, you know, the NFL, you know, you'd think adjustments are a little more uniform across the board because, you know, just the way the coaching is set up. But this is a team right now where the defense is making the adjustments and the offense is not. Certainly, you know, I'm not trying to pick on any one in particular, but, you know, the coaching adjustments are better on defense right now. I'm sure that, you know, there's certainly – and look, this isn't me questioning the effort or the trying to make adjustments. It's just they're not been there yet, and that's – I mean, for the millionth time, it's got to happen this week. Mm-hmm. It has to happen this week.
It 100% has to happen, and it's funny that you say that because you could argue the Bengals offense has more talent than the Bengals defense.
Agreed.
So that's why it's like – you really should tip your cap to the leaders on the defense because they get that team ready to go. And Lou Anarumo putting together a game plan and then adjusting.
Through the
game.
You look at the Bengals defense and across the board, you're like, oh, they're solid.
Solid.
Those are all solid
exactly.
players.
Exactly. Yes.
But over on the offense, it's like, oh, you got some superstars. So I don't. Do you look at the Bengals defense and say, "Oh, there's one superstar"?
No, their best player is Trey Hendrickson, and he barely speaks. You know, like I'm talking about superstar.
Like
he's not even like a fan favorite. Like he just does his job at a really high level. Yeah. But that's what makes this Bengals team and what's going on so fascinating.
Yeah.
All right. So we don't have to do scores if we don't want to. But let's predict. Do you think the Bengals get back on track and beat the Jets?
I do. I wrote my – check out every Thursday morning on Cincinnati.com my predictions. I do prediction for the Bengals and the Bearcats games coming up that week. Yeah, I said that I know contrary to, you know, what we've discussed here and some things, I don't think the Jets defense is very good. I don't have it in front of me, but I think they have like two takeaways. They've had three sacks. They have third most points given up in the AFC so far this year. I just don't think it's a very good defense. And you heard what Charlie said about the secondary mm-hmm. being kind of in disarray. And disarray is not the right word, but communication issues. I think this is the perfect game for the Bengals to get their offense on track, and they will. I say they win 28-14.
Okay. I do think they're going to win. I think they're going to win because Joe Burrow is going to make them win.
Yeah.
And I think, like, it's go time. And I think that'll be the message in the locker room. I don't quite have a score. I mean, I might even say the Bengals defense gives them one of the turnovers. So I might say, like, 31-14.
No argument here.
Yeah.
I did say this in my prediction too, that I think it's hard to turn around all the Bengals offensive issues in 1 week.
Yes.
So I think you'll still see some issues, but because the combination of the Bengals making some improvements and the opponent, I think leads to the victory and gets things moving in the positive direction. But there's certainly still some issues I think they're going to work on. I don't think magically that offensive line is just magically going to be gelled and the chemistry is all going to be there. And obviously the Collins issue and whether he plays or not. And so is everything going to be perfect and the well-oiled machine that it was down the stretch of last year on Sunday? I don't think it will be. But I think you'll see improvement and certainly enough improvement for them to get the victory.
Yep. And it's right. It's a quick turnaround after that because they play on Sunday and then they play on Thursday night football. And before we leave, we would be remiss if we did not mention our special podcast next week. We'll, of course, on Monday have our recap podcast. But if you can get an extended lunch break, ask your boss if you can take some time for lunch next Wednesday because Jason and I will be broadcasting live from the Holy Grail at the Banks at 12:30. And our special guest will be Andrew Whitworth, who is in town for the Amazon Prime Thursday night game. He's part of the broadcast crew, and he is kind enough to stop by and do a podcast with us. So we're really looking forward to it. If you're a big Whitworth fan, even if you're not and you want to just come hang with Jason and I, talk some Bengals, grab some food. I think the energy around Cincinnati is going to be really awesome. The weather's supposed to be really nice next week. Mm-hmm. Thursday night football's here. The Ring of Honor, the white Bengal helmets. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this podcast going on the road to Holy Grail. So you come out 12:30 on Wednesday. Andrew Whitworth, Kelsey Conway, myself, we'll have some fun. You know, I know some people on Twitter were asking, like, hey, do you think I can get an autograph with Whitworth? You know, I would say, hey, come out, get lunch, get a beer if you want, if you can, you work, you know, whatever, at the Holy Grail. And, you know, it might, you know, I wouldn't speak for him, but, you know.
I would think you get a pretty good shot at it.
And because I don't think it'll be like, you know, it is before like a Reds or Bengals game where that place is shoulder to shoulder.
Right.
You know, I think there'll be a solid amount of people there, but probably not so much that you can't maybe get up there and get a chance to ask him for an autograph. So, or say hi or whatever. Come out 12:30 next Wednesday. Holy Grail.